Would you like to find joy when learning languages?
Ciao, siamo Gabriele e Angelique. Benvenuti nel nostro podcast. We are passionate language learners and we record for you the language learning podcast we'd like to play when we learn new languages.
Our podcast in mixed English and simple Italian helps beginners and intermediate Italian language learners enjoy engaging content about Italy, its language, and its culture from day zero of their language learning journey.
Today, you're in for a treat. With Christmas fast approaching, we thought of sharing with you an episode that will give you hope and joy. We'd like to share with you our conversation with Heidi Lovejoy, the creator of a language learning podcast called Love, Joy and Languages. Born and raised in Kentucky, USA, she started her language learning journey back in 2017, when she first moved to Italy together with her husband and her two children.
Learning Italian while being a parent to two young kids in a foreign country? How hard can it be? Heidi shared with us her journey both as a language learner and as a parent. As you might have guessed, the path she chose was not easy. Rather than chasing after perfection and getting stuck in her negative self-talk, she learned to let go and trust the process. And this was what she did when her family moved to Germany and had to start their life again from scratch.
If you're seeking some joy in your language learning process and feel hopeful this Christmas holiday, then this is the episode you should listen to. This will be our last episode for 2022, as we'll be taking a break and we'll be spending time with our loved ones in the weeks to come.
Tune in next month as we'll release more episodes about Italy and more. In the meantime, you can support us by leaving us a review in Apple Podcast and on Spotify and joining our Patreon community. Listen now to our conversation and learn about the joy of learning languages. So, welcome again to our podcast. And for today, we have a special guest. She's Heidi. She's actually the host of another podcast, a language learning podcast called Joy, Love, and Languages. And together
love,
with me...
Love, Joy, and Languages. Sorry. Huh? Love, Joy, and
Languages. Oh, I switched it. Oh, sorry. Love, Joy, and Languages podcast. And joining me, of course, is Gabriele.
Ciao a tutti.
And today we will be talking about a lot of things, some of which will be parenting and the language learning experience that she had in other countries other than America, like in countries other than America, and also like the mindset and the philosophy of pursuing languages over the years. So I think we can begin.
Sono d'accordo. Iniziamo, dai. Angie, vai tu con la prima domanda.
Io. My first question would be, what was your, like, how was your experience growing up? Like, how was your environment? Because we heard some we've listened to some episode of yours, and I can't help but wonder, like, growing up in Kentucky, how was it like? And how was, like, language learning, how was language learning in Kentucky? Because I assume that people are a bit more close-minded, a bit more 100% all-American. So, yeah.
Sì. Yeah. Io sono anche molto curioso perché me lo immagino molto diverso dall'Italia al Kentucky. Quindi sono proprio curioso. Raccontaci.
Yes, Kentucky is very different than Italy. I can't say anything particularly negative about Kentucky, but growing up there was, in my mind, it wasn't close-minded at the time. And even still, of course, I can't make any generalizations about any state or place or even city, because there's people of all different backgrounds. But educationally, the only language access I had was in high school. So we didn't have any language access in the public school system for me, even in elementary school and primary school and middle school. It wasn't until high school. And by that point, I wanted to learn languages so bad. You know, when I listened to music that there was a Latina artist and they had the translation or they had the original song in Spanish, I loved listening to it. And I would get out, you know, the CD or the cassette tape lyrics and go through them and try to like translate word for word, which of course doesn't work out. And then I'd get frustrated. And I was very interested when my dad would watch documentaries a lot on TV. And of course, when they're having an interview, you hear the first part of the person's native language. And it was so exciting. And I just always wanted to know what they said, but I didn't know that I could do that. And this is back, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, like there wasn't internet. I had no idea that you could learn a language without a parent speaking language to you. So I was 16 years old when I took my first Spanish class, and I was gung-ho. I was like, ready, I'm going to learn this language. And you learn vocabulary and you learn grammar rules, and I could do all the tests and quizzes with no problem, make great grades. But then I couldn't speak at all. And I found out my second semester, of Spanish that we had, it's called a foreign language festival, and everybody in the county, the schools would get together and have like competitions in language. And as one of the highest graded students, I guess you would say, in the class, I don't want to say best student because I still couldn't speak. I was chosen to do something where I had to sit in a classroom with a, I don't know, the person grading me, I guess you could say. And she I had a card with a picture on it. And when I flipped over that card, I had to tell her in Spanish everything I could describe about this picture. And I told my teacher, I am not going to be able to do this. And she was like, no, you're doing great. You understand all this stuff. And I said, but I can't speak. I don't, there's no way. She didn't believe me. And of course the day came, I flipped over the picture and I could say, man, boy, nothing came to mind. I wasn't prepared and I totally blanked out. And from then on, I was like, well, this just isn't for me. I can't learn languages. And really the only languages that I even heard growing up, of course, English was the majority of everything. We heard some Spanish at a Mexican restaurant, or I had a friend whose mother was Korean, and that was it. I didn't hear languages, and I didn't go even in the bigger cities in Kentucky. I didn't hear other languages. And if you did, you just assumed it was someone who was traveling, and that was it. So yeah, the access to languages at that time was very low. Public schools, when they did offer it, unless you knew that you needed to do a lot of study on your own or a lot of practice on your own, you weren't going to be able to go somewhere and speak it. And it was discouraging. I just thought, I mean, I'm a math person. So of course I was told in so many ways that I'm also not a language person because science is here, language arts are here, and they're not the same. So I just always thought, well, I guess this is just not for me, unfortunately. So yeah, that was a lot of my experience around languages and how they were presented to us in Kentucky as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, that's interesting. And è anche un po' come mi immagino, in generale, l'America, diciamo, l'educazione in America. Noi in Italia abbiamo sempre considerato fortunati gli americani, soprattutto, anche gli inglesi, i britannici, ma soprattutto gli americani, perché non dovevano imparare l'inglese. Ma poi crescendo e imparando le lingue, diciamo, imparando le lingue personalmente, ma in generale entrando nella vita lavorativa, mi sono reso conto che quello che sembrava un difetto in realtà era un vantaggio, perché quando si inizia a dover imparare magari la seconda, la terza lingua, essere abituati fin da piccoli a dire, ok, non esiste solo l'italiano, perché per un italiano è ovvio che non esiste solo l'italiano. Mm-hmm. Mentre, diciamo, e questa secondo me è un po' una sfortuna per chi vive in paesi come gli Stati Uniti, invece non è ovvio che non esiste solo l'inglese. Cioè, e si vede anche quando poi come turisti, non tutti, ma si vede poi quando tante persone come turiste vengono in Italia dagli Stati Uniti e si aspettano che tutti parlino inglese, mm-hmm. come se fosse una cosa naturale e non come, ok, let's help each other here, I'm a foreigner, so please, mm-hmm. let's speak the common tongue. It's more like, Well, of course you have to speak English. Why doesn't everybody speak English?
See? I've had conversations with my mom about this before, where there was a distinct moment in our childhood when we realized that other people whose native language was not English weren't translating everything in their head from English. Like there was a, and I was probably like 12 or 13 years old, as silly as that might sound, when I realized they're speaking that language, not translating from English. Like English isn't going on in their head. Like that's a big thing to have to realize. And of course, I mean, like you said, coming from the US when we didn't even have access, like, you know, people speak other languages, but that privileged point of view, I would say, is that we forget or don't even realize that English is not the center of the world, as massive as the language as it is, as much as everybody is using it, or so many people are using it as an international language. It's not the center of everyone's world. And people experience their lives differently from a different language. Like, to me, I mean, I just get goosebumps saying it because I think it's amazing. But yeah. And on a side note, I've since learning languages and learning so much more about grammar and how to understand new grammar, I am so thankful to be a native English speaker, because I don't see how anyone learns it at all from another language, because it is so difficult. Trying to teach my daughter how to spell, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. There's no sense to it at all.
Sì. Anche se quello che per noi italiani è sempre stato più difficile dell'americano in generale, è la pronuncia, non la grammatica. Io ricordo con come posso dire, con rammarico, like with despair, like listening to these movies when I hear someone from, I don't know, Texas speaking, and I was like, why? I studied English for so many years, and I literally don't understand 80% of what they're saying. And it took me like more than a decade to be able to understand what people in Texas say. It's like, it's so frustrating. And it's also because language is such, English is such a language spoken in so many different areas in the world, mm-hmm. that they're like different types of English.
Yes.
And that's also another thing that is peculiar to English and not so much to other languages. Like I think it's kind of reassuring for a foreigner coming to Italy and seeing that everybody speaks the same Italian. There are dialects, but Italian is the same for everybody. You go to Germany and every German speaks the same German. Mm-hmm. While you go to the States, and if you go to New York, and if you go to Alabama or Texas, they're different. It's a very interesting fact, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, growing up in Kentucky, there's different accents even in Kentucky. If you're in Eastern Kentucky or Western Kentucky, it tends to be more of the Southern accent, more similar to Texas. And in Northern Kentucky, they have a completely different accent. And I grew up with that very Southern accent. My family still to this day all speaks with a very Southern accent. So when I'm around them long enough, I start to pick it up more. But sad story, when I went to college, I said, you know, in the United States, that Southern accent was at least at the time viewed as unintelligent. And so I said, I don't want it. I'm going to move away. I don't want to be viewed by how I speak. And so I got rid of it, but it comes back from time to time. But when I graduated high school, my dad took me on vacation up to Minnesota, at the Minnesota-Canada border. And I loved the way they spoke. Like, it was so different than any accent I was used to. But they did not understand each other. So my dad was, I don't even know, 40-something at the time, maybe. And he could not understand the locals, and they could not understand him, because they spoke the same words, but the accents and the pronunciation of the words was completely different. So I like prided myself in being able to translate between two English speakers in the same country, from the same country, who didn't understand each other's accents. But that was, you know, when I was living in Italy, at least I knew when someone was either speaking a different language or speaking dialect, because even if I didn't understand the words, I could understand the rhythm of it. and just the way it was spoken. So when I'd be in a conversation and locals were changing to something that sounded not Italian, I was like, ah, they're speaking dialect. Now I get it. I'm not supposed to understand this because I don't understand the Venetian dialect, so it's okay. And that helped a lot. But if you don't know what the words even are, what you're supposed to be hearing, it would be very stressful.
Yeah, it is a very different language learning experience. Like from the Italian perspective of going to a country where there's only one language, but then people can kind of speak different version of it, and coming to Europe where people not only have dialects, but they have like the same language, but then many dialects. It's very different. But I have one last question on your, let's say, language learning journey, and then I will let Angie speak. Come ti sei trovata a passare dalla tua lingua madre con una grammatica abbastanza semplice, ma tante parole, uno spelling molto difficile, alle lingue romanze e germaniche, che invece hanno una fonetica molto precisa, ci sono delle regole precise, quindi basta studiare le regole e, diciamo, è molto più semplice dell'inglese, ma poi una grammatica con delle strutture grammaticali completamente inesistenti rispetto all'inglese. Il genere, like in italiano il congiuntivo, the cases in German. It's like, it's more like you have to rewire your brain into a different way of thinking. So how was that for you? How did that bring your joy or despair?
It brought both. It has brought both. Well, at least in the high school Spanish, what little I remember was that I did take in at least the phonetic spellings, so that part was easy, and some of the grammar, like me gusta. Okay, I already knew me gusta and me amo, so got some of that reflexive stuff. So in my very first, you know, Italian lesson where we learned, well, actually wasn't the first, we learned, oh my gosh, how do I say it? Mi chiamo. Mi chiamo. Okay, this makes sense. I don't have to question why, because at least I have that. So that at least gave me just the smallest introduction to where I was open-minded enough to not question everything grammar. I don't have to say, yes, but why is it this way? I need to know why. It was just kind of an acceptance. This is how it is, and I'll go with it and try to make sense of it. Yeah, I mean, the spelling in Italian has been, for the most part, the only thing I have trouble with is maybe double letters. No problem. It's great. And then German is a little bit more complicated spelling-wise, but because of my English, it is easier to pick up than maybe someone coming from Italian. As far as grammar goes, yeah. I'm a math person, so I think in that sense, I think that's given me a very deep respect and love for grammar. Even in English, I always loved learning grammar in school, and I love using grammar properly, even though that changes from, you know, decade to decade. But I think that part has made it, because the grammar to me is, as a mathematician, the grammar is like the algorithm of the sentence. The words are like the numbers, and the grammar is the structure that brings it together, that you can get from point A of having words to point B of putting them into a sentence that makes sense to the person I'm speaking to. So I've loved the grammar, but yes, it's very difficult. Just getting to a point where I can say, I'm learning the rules and then taking in the rules more. When I read, I can now, even in German, my German is still at a very beginner level, but even in German, when I read, I can at least understand which one is the verb and which case is being used. Even if I can't produce that, or I couldn't even tell you the rules, I just know them. I see them enough that I can understand them. Getting to that point it's something that brings me joy, because now I can put the pieces together even if I don't completely understand it. And this is one little piece of the puzzle. But then the despair is, you know, when you try to learn all the, and that's how it is in classroom settings. You learn the rules, and then you do some practice sentences, and then you move on to the next role. And that type of learning can easily bring despair unless you're constantly coming back and finding content that then utilizes those rules. The congiuntivo. I mean, I just had an Italian lesson an hour ago, and we're harping on congiuntivo because that is the big piece that's going to take me to that upper intermediate level. And I can understand it better now when I read it or hear it. I understand it better. But trying to find ways to find it in English has helped too. Like saying, if I were you, instead of just if I was you is incorrect. Why? Because that's a subjunctive that we don't learn in school as a subjunctive, not in the way that Italians learn all the verb tables. It's not the same. So yeah, finding little things in my language, in my native language, that are the same, and just continue to try to accept it as it is and learn it and use it and recognize it slowly, it kind of comes together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense because, per esempio, Gabriele, sei anche un po' matematica, come pensi la lingua, no? So it feels nice that I hear also another mathematician. Well, he's not a mathematician, but a programmer. There's this logical thing going on in the mind, and I don't think it's true. Like, mathematicians are not good language learners. I think it's actually useful to know some math because you also get to use some logic. Mm-hmm. And in the case of like Italian, maybe Spanish, French, German, they have some logic in their own way, as Chinese would have its own logic, which doesn't make sense for other countries. And for my case, like I'm not good at math. My brother is. But at the same time, he struggles to express himself in languages because he doesn't find any sense out of the languages. He's just good with numbers. But if you could translate those numbers or like that rationality to another thing like languages, I think it will open up new doors. And yeah, that was a comment, not a question. But I think that made me wonder like how did this journey go from the US to Italy and then to Germany? I know that it's because of your husband's job, but as well, like, did you just tag along or did you also try to establish yourself in Europe as well?
Both. I mean, I'm getting to tag along, which is the best part. But when we learned that we were coming to Italy, we wanted to come to Europe. Like, we've been trying for years, and finally his job said, yes, you can go. And we were just crazy excited. And I knew that I wanted to immerse myself as much as possible. And I had no idea how long we would be in Europe at all. It was supposed to be 3 years. We got extended a fourth year. Then we ended up being able to come to Germany after. So this has been way more than I even expected. But I knew I wanted to at least immerse myself like in the community and just learn as much as I could, not of just the language, but of the people. And I got very lucky to live in a town where there were enough moms at my daughter's school who spoke English that I could make some connections immediately, even before I spoke like no Italian. And some of those people spoke good enough English. They wouldn't say their English is fluent, but it was enough for us to make friendships. And now over the years, those conversations have switched to more Italian as my Italian gets better. Which has been fun, but yeah, I always anticipated at least immersing myself. And now I'm at the point where I don't want to leave. I mean, if I could just stay in Europe forever, I would be so happy. If I could go back to Italy and live forever, I would be so happy. It feels like home in a way. Yeah, I moved away from home when I was 22 and I never returned back to Kentucky to live. So I've moved all over the United States for years and now here. And Italy was the first place that really, really felt like home after leaving Kentucky. But it was because of the community, you know, the language, the schools, the people, mostly the people, the food, of course, all of those things, just, you know, they're all so comforting. So as far as that journey goes, I was open to being there, open to really immersing in the culture and community. And it took over a part of me. As far as languages go, I knew I wanted to learn the language, and I mean, this is a whole other, we could talk about this for hours. That's why I have a whole podcast about it. But I knew I wanted to learn the language. And in the beginning, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't have a goal for like how far I was going to go. It was fluency. You know, that's what I wanted, was fluency. having no idea what that really meant as far as having conversations or passing a test or getting to a certain level. I knew none of that. And so in the beginning, it was very frustrating because I wasn't progressing as fast as I thought I should. Also, remember, I had a daughter who was 4 going to the asilo for the first time, for, you know, first year, her learning the language and me having to emotionally support her in that journey. I had a son who was 1. I was going back to grad school. Like, I had so much going on, but still I thought, I just need to get fluent in this language and I have to do it really, really fast because that's how it's done. And it took a lot of years of failing and being hard on myself and making all the mistakes and leaving conversations crying because I just either didn't understand or couldn't express myself. And then it took lockdown too, where I'm away from that community physically, but still in the country, to realize that it doesn't have to be stressful, that every conversation I do have is moving forward and making connections. And once I reached that point, especially where I just kind of let go of the perfectionist mindset and let go of being really hard on myself and let go of the goal of fluency, when I started making more connections through the language, the friendships I had with people who only spoke Italian got deeper because now I was focused on just communicating with them, not speaking to them perfectly, hearing every single word they say and understanding everything. And that just, it rooted me in my language learning and in the experience of living in another country in a way that when we moved to Germany, now I kind of already had that. I had a better idea of what I was getting myself into. My kids had a better idea of what they were getting into, going to the local schools. And it's made this process easier. And it's also helped continue to keep the connections we have in Italy as well, both with the language and with the people.
So now my question would be, how do you maintain all 3 languages at home? And you said in one of your episodes, like your husband has German descent. I think his parents are from Germany. Like, does he speak fluent German as well?
No, his parents are both native German speakers, and they both immigrated to the U.S. when they were in their teens and learned English. And so by the time they had children, they said, you know, we're living in the U.S. We're going to speak English. They spoke German to each other at home, like it was around them, but they didn't teach their kids German. They didn't speak it in the house, you know, like a one parent thing or anything like that. So, my husband doesn't speak German. Yeah, he knows words, and I think he understands. He says he understands a lot more than he realized he did, because it's in there somewhere from his early childhood years. So, maintaining it at home is... it's changed a lot over the years. We speak English, and my kids have always gone to either an Italian or German school. So in the beginning, I tried teaching my daughter how to read and write in English, but there was just no time. Her energy wasn't there. In Italy, there was a lot of homework, and we spent too much time on school. She needed a break. But when she started learning to read in Italian, it's phonetic enough. It is phonetic, that English was phonetic enough that she knew enough words of English spoken that when she picked up a book, she could figure out what she was reading. So if something in English isn't spelled normally, because she at least had that phonetic background, she could figure out what it said. Spelling, completely different story. Of course, that takes a lot of time and intention and a lot of reading to pick up on the nuances of English spelling. But I let go of that thinking, and now that they're going to the German school, they're learning English really deeply in the German school. So if we stay here, it'll work itself out. I'm not worried about her reading and writing in English. So we maintain that language at home, just speaking it naturally and natively. Italian, my daughter is almost 10, and she started, we moved to Italy when she was 4. So she still has her best friends. You know, they went to school together in the same class for 4 years that we video chat with sometimes. She reads in Italian on her own. I read to her in Italian. When we remember that we can speak the language together, we switch to Italian often, especially if we don't want someone else to know what we're saying, you know. And a lot of times, even in our small community here in Germany, there's a lot of Italian speakers. So at the park, we hear people speaking Italian and we're like, oh, where are you from? Or there's a gelateria in the mall next to us where the people there are from Bassano del Grappa, which was like 30 minutes down the road from us where we lived in Italy. So we strike up conversation with them. And we really share, my daughter and I especially share a bond over the Italian language. So we're maintaining. If we move back, she'll need to get to a point where she's studying more and inputting a lot more, but it's enough to where she can converse with her friends still with no problem. And she has the sweetest friends. Like, they don't care that her Italian is broken. They don't care that every now and then she throws in a German or English word. Like, it's the most amazing friendship to me to see in young people. And then German, you know, they're getting it in the school. And my son, especially, he's mostly forgotten his Italian. He was just barely five when we moved here. So he's picked up German and he will speak German to me at home just whenever he's in the mood to. And we just kind of flow with it without stress or anything. And I try to take advantage of any of the opportunities that my kids bring to me. If my daughter starts speaking Italian, I'm on it. We're going to speak Italian for as long as she wants to. If my son starts speaking German, we'll switch to that. Sometimes I'll ask them and just see what they respond in. But because I'm not a native or even advanced speaker in either German or Italian, we just do what we can. And I try to be a supportive role for them, showing them that they can do it, that we are doing it together. They don't have to do it alone. And just kind of make it a part of our life in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Well, I don't have the exact same experience, but I had those, like when I listened to an episode of yours, you mentioned a lot about expectations. And I feel guilty about it because I also have those expectations that were implanted on me when I was young. Like, for example, when I first went to Europe, to Italy, my parents expected me to be fluent in a year. And I said, yes. What do you mean by fluency? And for them, it's like being able to navigate everywhere in complete, like mm-hmm. just speaking completely in Italian and not struggling. And it's hard because growing up, sure, I learned more than one language. I even speak like our family's dialect. But it's like they don't understand the difficulty of attaining a language. Mm-hmm. Yet, when I tell them, because his parents doesn't speak, like Gabriela's parents doesn't speak English and my parents don't speak Italian. So they really have a big communication gap. And we're usually the translators.
È anche un vantaggio che non si possano parlare. Mm. A volte non è una cosa negativa, giusto?
Yeah.
Sì,
poi,
è vero.
I miei genitori sono italiani, i suoi genitori sono filippini, però di origine cinese, quindi due culture molto diverse tra di loro, anche se condividiamo l'amore per il cibo, tutti e due.
Mm, sì.
Questo è è vero. Ma ti volevo chiedere una cosa, Heidi. Com'è la tua esperienza di language learner avendo dei bambini? Ti senti che... Come posso dire? Do you feel like you are a bit chasing after them, that they are... Because they are younger, they can learn much faster than what you or I can, or somehow you feel like you can lead them through, or you're more like a playmate when it comes to languages. Because it's always like I realized, with years passing along, that I still have the passion for learning languages, but I can tell that I'm struggling more than when I mm-hmm. started learning my first languages in my teens. So it must be a bit challenging confrontarsi così con i figli, dove da una parte devi avere questo ruolo di guida, ma dall'altra i tuoi figli apprendono molto più velocemente di te. Com'è stato per te?
For me, I might have a somewhat unique experience because when we moved to Italy, my daughter was four. She went to the Scuola Materna and she was so excited to learn Italian. She learned, you know, to count to 10 very quickly. She learned the word farfalla. I don't know why, but farfalla like stuck with her. And she's telling everyone, I can already say farfalla and I'm going to go to the Italian school. But she didn't understand what it meant to learn Italian, to go to an Italian school until we got there and she realized they don't understand me and I don't understand them. You know, like she was four. She was excited, but she had no idea what she was really getting into. And she is a very feeling person and she was very attached to me. So she had a lot of social anxiety in the beginning. With respect to the language, that did give me time to acquire some on my own before she got to a point where she was emotionally calm enough to hear the language. It took a few months for her to not cry every day when I would take her to school, to not cry at the playground whenever they were playing. And I could tell, and so they started in like September, and in January when they started back, she got the flu that first week back to school, and she was so sad she couldn't go. And I was like, ooh, and we lived right next to the school, so she could see her friends out there playing every day that week when she was sick. And I think that was kind of the moment in time when it switched to where she's like, okay, I do want to go to school and I do want to interact with these people. And it opened her mind to hearing the words that she had been hearing for months. And at that point, she started to gain traction very quickly because she's hearing it for 7 hours a day and she's able to communicate. But those first few months, while emotionally very difficult, I could study enough to where I could notice her mistakes. I could give her some words. Because in the beginning, when she would come home and I wanted to play like My Little Ponies with her one day, and my pony said, ciao, she goes, no, Mom, in English. I was like, and I was heartbroken. I was like, all I did was say, ciao, come on. And she didn't want to, but she needed that distinction of English at home. She needed that connection, the bonding experience at home to emotionally be ready for the school. So with her, I did not experience the, I mean, she learned different, but at that point we were kind of learning at the same pace in the sense that we were learning different words, different themes. She was learning math and numbers at school. She was learning, you know, whatever poems they had, whatever themes they had going on in grammar, she's learning that particular vocabulary. And then there was some overlap with things that I was learning just about daily life and kids, because that's usually what we talk about with the moms was kids in school. So there was some overlap, but we complemented each other very well. And we got to a point where we more kind of teach each other words, either by, did you know what this word is? Or I learned a new word today, or by just talking and figuring it out together. So she and I have had a very, I would say, almost parallel experience learning the language. And then because I understand just grammar in general, I already knew what a pronoun and a verb were. She had to learn those in the school. I could learn the grammar structure faster because I had something to compare it to with my native language, and she didn't have that. So in those ways, like our language acquisition has complemented each other. In German with my son, it's a bit different because when we moved to Italy, he was one. So he lived four more years, just being surrounded by a language that, like, it was normal to him to hear two languages or more. And so by the time we moved to Germany, he was like, okay, I'm going to the German school. Like, he knew what to expect. He knew he wouldn't understand. And he just kind of makes all the mistakes and doesn't care. And that's really, really cool to see because he's not been reserved with his language at all. And I started learning German before we moved here. As soon as we knew we were going to move here, actually, as soon as we wanted to move here, I started learning German. I was like, I'm going to manifest this. I'm going to start learning the language. We're going to get to Germany. And it happened. And so I already had a head start. And then when he started kindergarten, it was a year ago, not even a year ago, 11 months ago, he started in the kindergarten. And it was like 3 or 4 months in, his teacher's like, he can understand, but he's not speaking anything. I said, just wait, it'll happen. And sure enough, like come like March, he was just full sentences, not grammatically correct, but he's getting all the words in there that he needs. And but I haven't gotten to a point yet where I feel like his German is more advanced than mine or anything like that. So I think for me, having two completely different personality children has been giving me two different perspectives, but also because I'm very passionate about the language learning aspect, I think I can stay on top of it. And when they are advancing faster at times, I use that as a learning experience for myself. Instead of, dang it, I need my kid to translate and, you know, I'm horrible. I can't believe I don't know this stuff. I really try to use that as a learning experience for myself. But I do know lots of people who come, they put their kids in the German or Italian schools or whatever, and then they just, you know, they can order their food and that's it. It just depends on what your own personal desires are with the language or whatever. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Sì. È molto interessante in realtà vedere come i due caratteri diversi dei tuoi figli ti hanno, diciamo, influenzato nel tuo studio della lingua. But to some extent, I would say that having kids in a foreign school also somehow held you accountable in your language learning journey. Like you had a very strong motivation to stay, if not ahead, at least to keep up with the pace of the of your kids learning the language. Yes. And that is a unique, I think, feature of your language learning journey.
Wait, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I will just believe you. Perhaps, I think, like I've seen parents from our circle of friends who actually had the same experience as Heidi, but I'm not sure if there are also other parents who just, like, as Heidi said, I just send my kids to school and that's it, and ciao. I won't even want to know about the language. And then it creates what Heidi quote unquote said, like the expat bubble, which exists because I've experienced it for a few years before I started dating you, Gabriele. So I guess, like, even though there were different personalities, and yes, kids teach you many things, including the way you could perceive learning a language, I think also what encourages these kids to be intuitive is through playing, I think, like, to be able to, not reinforce them to learn this and that, like the grammar, like how you studied Spanish, because that that same principle was done to me in Mandarin Chinese, and I hated it all when I was growing up because it was just forced on me because it was supposed to preserve my cultural heritage. Mm-hmm. But I didn't enjoy it one bit until I realized something was missing in me while being an adult. And it was when I realized, like, to heal myself, I had to do it through languages. So I'm now taking, like, for example, advanced classes on the dialect, also intermediate classes in Mandarin Chinese together with, you know, Italian stuff. But yeah, do you think it's underrated, this concept of play through language learning? Like, for example, we have Duolingo now and all these apps, but it's kind of digital. What if, like, for example, we try to interact in a more personal way in school rather than forcing kids, you know, to memorize a bunch of words and memorize a bunch of grammar, but not instilling in them the curiosity as what you observe between the kids when they play?
I think there's something to be said for a language learner at any level, at any age, to personalize the language. Even if you want to learn the language for no reason, like you don't have a connection with the people or the culture or anything, you still have to have something that motivates you and something that personalizes it to make it useful. If you're not using the language, eventually I feel like most people would lose a motivation or lose a desire, or just like it doesn't click, like you said. So for children, personalizing it is play, because that's what kids want to do, whether they're on the playground or playing ball or whatever. They need something to make it fun for their interests. And we say the same thing about adults. We say it all the time as language learners. Find something that interests you. Talk about yourself. The first thing I want to learn, if I pick up a new language, the first thing I want to know is, hi, please, thank you. And I am Heidi. I am from Kentucky. I have two children. I want to talk about me and my interests. And, you know, yesterday I was speaking to a mom at my kid's school in German, and my German is not great, but one of the first things she asks is, so what do you like to do? I was ready. I know what I like to do because I've purposefully acquired this vocabulary in German. So it's the same for all of us. And yeah, so for kids in the Italian school, when my daughter had English class, it was, here's pictures of things and you need to know them, right? And even for her, it was different because they speak British, they learn British English. And so she had to figure out, you know, in my native language, this is what I call a sweater, but she's calling it a jumper. What is this? I don't understand. So we had to navigate that, but they learned vocabulary by pictures. And in the German school, they do a lot of songs and a lot of movement, you know, singing songs of stand up, sit down, you know, things like that, that are useful and fun. And on top of that, kids need to be able to get their energy out. If they're sitting in class all day, every day, they are not going to, generally speaking, and I'm not a teacher, but they're not going to learn a new language in first or second grade from sitting and having a lecture with pictures and having to reproduce this weird spelling that you had to now memorize. Like, it's just not going to happen. But if we speak to people's passions, and for children, that's play, they're much more likely to at least pick up something. Even if they don't pick it up, you know, to any advanced level, they're going to remember something. And later down the road, it might just spark that interest. And I've had to, this is kind of off topic, but in the same way, I wanted my kids to have access to other languages. So when we moved to Italy, they were definitely going to go, you know, not to a bilingual or international school. They were going to go to the Italian school. And for me, that was important. And I wanted them to reach fluency. Like, this was very important to me. And I realized that that expectation wasn't very realistic. If we had to go back to the US, how am I going to maintain that language in a community where there probably are no or very few speakers of language? You know, they're going to lose it. But at a minimum, they have an experience. They have memories of the country and the people and the food. And in a school setting, if they only have memories of sitting down and having to memorize vocabulary, that's boring. That's not interesting. If they have memories of playing and songs, I don't remember the words of that song, but I remember we were up and jumping around and laughing and having fun. That's their emotional connection to a language. So later on down the road, when they're in university or whatever, and they come across this ability to have a class, they might have that spark that's still there. So yeah, I mean, to me, it's always important. And I've learned the hard way, spending years of just trying to drill grammar and vocabulary and it not working, speaking to someone's desires and what they want and where they want to focus their energy is, in my opinion, the best way to make a connection with the language, no matter what level you desire to speak it at. That's like number one. That's going to create some sort of little fiery passion inside.
Sono proprio d'accordo. Se, se imparare una lingua non è divertente, è veramente difficile andare avanti solo per disciplina. Ti volevo chiedere, all'inizio hai menzionato, cioè hai raccontato, che studi italiano con un insegnante madrelingua e con uno invece non madrelingua. Mm-hmm. Ecco, come sono queste due esperienze per te? Io personalmente ho trovato che studiare con un madrelingua da una parte aiuta a migliorare la pronuncia sicuramente e aiuta la comprensione, ma dall'altra rende parlare più difficile, perché è difficile per un madrelingua resistere e non correggerti quando fai un errore. E almeno nella mia esperienza questo è demotivante, perché sì, a volte vorrei solo parlare, provare ad esprimermi, anche se quello che dico non è proprio come lo direbbe un madrelingua. Tu cosa ne pensi?
I think I mentioned this before we started the recording, so I will repeat it then. I keep in Italian. I have my lessons on Italki. It's an excellent platform for me right now. And so I always keep two instructors. One is a native speaker and one is not. There's so much that could be said for this. I came across this method just randomly. I initially wanted a native speaker because I thought that was very important to have a native speaker. And I've come to change that view to what's most important in a teacher is that they are a teacher, because native speakers might be able to speak and they might be good for conversation, but they're not always going to be good at explaining why something is a certain way if you want to know that, or they may not be good at being able to speak to your learning preferences. So teacher is most important. Someone who has some experience in teaching or tutoring, I think, is very important. But like you said, between a native speaker, you get certain pronunciations or colloquialisms and idioms and stuff that can make you feel more like a fluent or advanced speaker, even if you're not. I remember the first time I learned how to say non vedo l'ora, like it's so common, but I was like, oh, that's not, you know, you don't say I can't wait. Like, that's how you say I can't wait. Okay. And like, I felt so advanced at that point. So knowing those little idioms and colloquialisms and stuff is very good for native speaker. And even in Italy, of course, native speakers speak with different accents, and there's different phrases and ways of saying things. So I've had a tutor from Sicily, I've had a tutor from Bologna, from Lombardy, from somewhere else in the East. They all speak a little bit differently and have different things to say about how to speak. So I love that about the native speaker tutor. But again, they're also either teaching students in university or someone who has some experience teaching or tutoring. So at least they can kind of react to my desires as a learner. Then there's the non-native speaker who has a unique perspective of having already acquired Italian as a second or third or 10th language. And they know what mistakes people tend to make because they made them themselves. If they are a native English speaker or already an advanced English speaker before learning Italian, they also know why we make the mistakes we do. You know, for example, I mean, this is a very basic one, but in English we say, I am 38 years old. In Italian we say, I have 38 years. To someone who may have never studied another foreign language, they wouldn't be able to kind of explain why. They may not understand why in Italian I'm saying, I am. Why are you using that verb instead of this one? You know, so they understand all those nuances along the way. They very personally understand the struggles that people have with particular topics. And in my experience, other people who have learned the language in school or on their own are very, very patient when I'm trying to express myself and it's taking a really long time to get through this sentence. And then I have to say it in English, but then also like try to translate in Italian. They're really patient. They understand the struggle. I am not near as nervous making mistakes around someone who's not a native speaker, whether they correct me or not, because I speak with many native speakers who don't correct me. Sometimes they'll just repeat what I was trying to say in native words. But yeah, the native speaker, I feel like, I'm not the native speaker, the non-native teacher who has also acquired the language, in my experience anyway, is very patient and open. And I'm just not near as afraid of making mistakes. But the key for me too is keeping both of these tutors kind of almost opposite each other. One of them this week, the next one the next week, or one of them on Monday and the next one on Thursday. But then I can have the same conversations between the two of them. I work through the mistakes with the non-native who then teaches and understands and is patient with my mistakes. Then what I've learned there, I go to the native speaker and speak. And then they can pick up on other things or the pronunciation or something else. So using them in tandem to kind of like have almost the same conversation, but twice. The first one's like a practice and learning, and the next one is a putting it into action kind of lesson.
Hi, everyone. Hope you're enjoying our episode. Are you struggling to keep your Italian language learning goals in check? Do you want someone to help you out and explain the language in a more personalized manner? With Italki, you can do all that. I myself have been taking Italian classes with Italki, and it has helped me immensely as my teacher gives me more time to understand and digest the complexity of Italian grammar through reading and writing exercises. Usually this is pretty expensive when you do it in person, but with Italki, language learning can be more affordable. With our affiliate link, you can get additional Italki credits of $10 once you purchase $20 worth of classes. Click on the link in our show notes and you can get extra Italki classes now. Thanks again for your time and let's head back to our episode. I like that philosophy. I haven't applied that since, well, budget issues, but but I like it. It's like thinking of it like a ping pong. Like one way you have that guy who's compassionate, the other one's the stern one who will try to correct you in other ways. So it's like a sound, it's like having a ping pong battle between the two, and somehow you're in between and you're getting the most out of it.
È molto. È un approccio secondo me vincente. E in realtà io sono sempre un po' stupito che c'è diciamo, una forte preferenza per gli studenti, non per gli studenti, per gli insegnanti native speaker, di lingua madre. E secondo me è un po' un pregiudizio. It's like a bias. There's this thought that studying with a native speaker is better than with a local. With not a local, with a foreigner speaker of that language who studied it maybe a lot, maybe even went through many years of university, got a degree and everything, but they're always like treated like second-class teachers in the community of teachers. And to the point that, I mean, we have several friends who went through that path, and someone who studied, I don't know, English maybe for. Because it's more common.
20 years.
Someone who studied English for maybe 10 years got a degree, got certificate, which certified that person is good at teaching that language, is paid less and less sought after. Someone who maybe just did a couple of weeks, I don't know, in Cambridge or Oxford and got like some certificate, but just because they're native speakers, they get more recognition, more students,
More pay.
more pay also. I think there's a strong bias there, and it's not true because just being native speaker, as Heidi said, doesn't make you a good teacher.
Yeah, exactly. For example, it's hard for me to teach you, like, for example, Tagalog.
Yeah, like when I was doing my lessons with Chinese native speakers, because I like studying Mandarin, and sometimes I would ask like, why is this way and not the other way? And sometimes she would just think a bit about it and then say, let me come back to you next session. I will think about it because it's just natural.
Yes.
To me, the biggest drawback at having a non-native speaker teacher is their different mindset. Like I noticed that when I was learning Mandarin, and it's like we as Italians, we describe Mandarin grammar using somehow the structures of Italian grammar. But since Mandarin is a very different language, that is not how Chinese people think of their own language at all. So you could have that bit of a bias where you think you're learning the grammar of a language, but you're just learning the perspective of that culture on the language. Like speaking in terms of, I don't know, like of complements for Italian, of syntagms and all of these structures when, in this case, like a Mandarin speaker doesn't think of that at all. It's just like this structure, you have these particles, it's A plus B plus C, and you use it in this context because they don't really have a grammar. I mean, they have more a set of rules and structure, but it's completely different. And studying with Italian teachers who know Mandarin, they have also a bias in the way they explain grammar. So I would say probably the best thing, in my opinion, is choosing a teacher who knows the language, who's not a native speaker, but whose culture is somehow not so far from the one
Student.
of the target language. So maybe, I don't know, studying French with a Spanish teacher, something like that.
In
Or
French.
studying German with an English teacher, or Russian with a Polish teacher. It's like going to the same family of language, just pick a teacher who's not from the same language, but from the same family. I don't know. It's
Interesting.
just uh...
Or at least who has some cultural connections to the language, perhaps. I follow a woman on Instagram. And she's learning Malayalam because her husband speaks Malayalam, but they live in Vietnam and she's a native English speaker. And she started having like some basic classes, but she has a connection to the language and the culture through her husband and through her husband's family. And so, I mean, and someone, a teacher has to be aware of those things too. Like you're aware that the Chinese think of Mandarin in a completely different way, grammatically speaking, than Italian. So at least you know, you may not be able to express it the same way, but you know that there's a disconnect in how it's approached, perhaps. You know, something else about native speakers too is, like I said earlier, you know, grammar and how we speak changes over the decades, over the years. And so what I know to have learned in school is still correct in written English, but it's not always how we speak. And of course, with social media, it's not how people write. Like, something that drives me crazy in English is when people write should have as should of instead of should have. I know grammatically it comes from should have, but we, you know, use an apostrophe to take out the, so it's should apostrophe V-E. I know that. But anyone who's learning the language now, anyone who may have been born in the last 20 years may not even know, a native speaker may not know that it really is should have, because they've always heard the way it's pronounced is should have. So people write it on social media, people always write should of, could of, would of. And there's always some grammar person there to tell them they're incorrect, right? But do we really know that internally as native speakers who have grown up with the internet, seeing it written that way? I don't know. If someone like that, a younger person, sees it in a book that's written and been edited, right? And it says should have or should apostrophe V-E, are they going to say, oh, that's wrong. Why are they writing it that way? I don't know. But this is one of those nuances that has changed the way it's been written, especially over social media, like the way it's pronounced has changed the way it's written in the public context, not the professional context. It's one of those nuances that a native speaker, like a non-native speaker, would have read and studied this particular thing and would maybe be more likely to understand its history versus a younger person who's only grown up with the internet.
Yeah, I noticed this. Like, those people, like on my, like that are as old as me, who are from America, they like to do colloquial English, but they don't really, they're not really strict with the grammar. Well, I tend to notice that there are some weird thing, like it didn't make sense, the English that they were speaking. So, but I try not to correct them because it will feel like insulting for them that some non-native, well, I'm almost like a native speaker, but not as native as if someone was raised in America or in England. And having to correct their English, it feels a bit weird. So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, maybe I'm a bit of a grammar Nazi sometimes, but I feel, yes, it is true that the language naturally evolves. But I also feel that nowadays with the social media, there is the danger of language evolving too quickly in a too much uncontrolled way. So I think it is our duty, let's say, as a, the older generation to push back, not because we don't want the language to change, but somehow to let it change in a more controlled way. And like, for example, I'm not a native speaker, of course, in English, not an English native speaker. But to me, when I, for example, when I watch some movies and I hear this, I don't know, dialect in the like African American community, and they say stuff like, "He don't mean that," or "It ain't no right." It's like, "It ain't no right." You're negating it twice. It's true. It's, you're saying it's right. So it's like, what's wrong with you? Or why are you using the plural form when it's third singular? It's like, I don't know. Like, okay, maybe the language will evolve that way. But in the past, there's always been somehow the filter of the written form. And that was what was teached in school. So, yeah, the language would evolve much more slowly. Well, now it's there's no control. And people in the social media, they start using a new slang. And I don't know, there's a bit the risk of losing the language and creating a lot of dialects. And in the end, lowering the capacity to communicate with each other.
And I know in the past, there's always been a difference between spoken language and written language. I think maybe in all languages, at least many languages, how I speak in English is never going to be how I would write formally, or, you know, just a story when I read books. It's very different. Like, I read every single day. I love reading. And even in English, I see words. I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Why would they use that word here? Like, that's not how we speak, because there's a difference. But now there's this third level of how we write online, how we write on social media, which is, if as societies we could say, okay, this is how we speak and is normal, whether in dialect or whatever, as long as we're communicating, that's what matters. Do we understand each other in communication? Great. We don't have to correct each other. In written language, it's different. And written language is written also, in my opinion, for language learners, because we're just intaking more, seeing the words, seeing the structures, you kind of internalize it. For me, and maybe it's because I'm a visual learner, so I internalize it different when I read it versus when I hear it. But then if we can also, like, as a society, accept that there is this third world of language that is the online social media language, it's going to be different. We can stop picking at each other to use perfect language and, ooh, I got you because you used Y-O-U-R when you should have used Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. You know, it just feeds into the negativity surrounding language, not even negativity of hatred and anger, but just the negativity around language. Like, have I communicated properly to you, whether I used the right form or not in this written social media language? Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes. Then that's okay. It's okay to use the double negatives, and it's okay to use the should of, because you've understood me. And I don't know, I feel like as a language learner, that's been the biggest thing for me. Is in Italian, one of the best things someone can say to me is ho capito. Whether I've said it wrong or right, if they've understood me, I don't have to then sit and think, did I use the right ending? Did I use the right word or verb form? If I'm struggling with something, they say, oh, capito, capito. Great. I can keep going now because I have that verification that I have been understood. And you know, in German, it's the same, because I very much sit and wallow in my mistakes. I wallow in my inability to think and produce when I don't know if they understand me. But if I can move that conversation forward with my mistakes and all, because I know they've understood me, done. It's great. And we've all communicated and connected. And I don't know, that's what it's all about. That's what really matters, whether it's in the spoken or the written or the social media written form. Have you understood? Then let's keep having the conversations that we need to be having.
Yeah. Well, that will be another topic as well, like how languages evolve through social media, because like now we're beginning to see how social media affects everything, mm-hmm. which is unprecedented, because social media didn't exist since, I don't know, like just a decade ago or something. I don't know, something like that. 2 decades ago, maybe. But let me think what I wasn't going to say.
It's evolving. It's changing everything.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to say that I think in English there is more difference between like the spoken and the written language. Then there is another languages, like the Romance languages, and and so also in social media you feel more this change. I think this is mainly because English having as a simpler language, sorry, not a simpler language, that's wrong, as a simpler grammar. And so to produce the same content, it has to rely on a more wide vocabulary. So there's a big difference in terms of vocabulary between the spoken form and the written form. While in the Romance languages, grammar conveys a lot of message, and the grammar is the same between the written form and the spoken language. There is a bit of difference, but it's more like some structure are not used, but if they're used, they're the same structure. So I think grammar is a strong, let's say, regularizer of language evolution in languages that have a lot of grammar. And while languages that have less grammar, like Chinese, like English, they evolve more. They evolve faster. Which is also an interesting thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's like. But yeah, that is what I noticed.
That is a very deep
Sorry, it's it is because also of my work, because I also work in NLP, and so it's like in natural language processing as a software engineer. So it's like I really see the difference in this.
Well, I wonder how much of this difference too is because there's so many people learning English as a second, third, fourth, fifth language, that how much are those native languages and foreign speakers influencing the language? And like I said, the I'm sorry, I don't remember what they call it, the Black community dialect. Mm-hmm. How much are those influencing, especially when social media, we have access to all of these other cultures and places and other people speaking? When I see someone online, I generally don't know where they're from. I don't know if they're a native speaker or not. How much are those things influencing the conversations, how the grammar and words are used on social media and then being used as a whole for English speakers? You know, which came first, the evolution of the language or the other people taking the language and utilizing it within their cultural and native language structures? I don't know.
I mean,
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that is true. Like, I always tell Angie, for example, when she makes some mistakes in Italian, that the problem is not that she's making a mistake. The problem is that when she makes a mistake with grammar, she's actually saying something else. It's not like she's making a mistake. I know that she made a mistake, but I can understand.
Yes.
Like this is, for example, the common case with gender and number. So if she says something like, ho visto una donna, it means like, I saw a woman. But if she says, ho visto un donno, that is not necessarily wrong, because she's probably meaning that she saw someone who looks like a woman but is a man. So you're not making a mistake, you're saying something different. And so it's hard, like with this kind of structure, evolution is harder, because if you make a mistake and you say something else, then people do not understand you, because you're saying something different.
Yes.
And if I, for example, if I start saying instead of donna with the double N, I say donna, I can still understand you. It's fine. But that's like the word changing. It's not like the grammar. It's a different thing. So if I say or ain't, it's like, okay, it's evolving, but I'm still saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if I made myself clear.
I think this happens for me a lot in Italian with nouns that end in E and the plural ends in I. I want to say it's plural, but I use the E because I don't know that the singular ends in E, because that's the general grammar structure is the plural feminine ends in E. So something like that. I mean, it doesn't change the whole meaning of what I'm trying to say, but if I say le lezione, it's because I know it's feminine and I forget that the singular ends in E, not the plural, you know, something like that. It would probably be understood, I assume, but I'm making the grammar mistake, not because I don't know, it's because I'm trying to say something using the basic grammar rule, not knowing that this one is more irregular. Yeah.
No, I mean, that is true. Yeah. That is true. That like the big problem is when your mistakes is not a mistake, but it's another meaning. You know, that's what I'm trying to say, that with this grammar, sometimes the mistake is still a good word, but it's with a different meaning. And so the person you're talking to is just like perplexed. It's like, did you just made a mistake or you've meant something else?
Every week, you know? I order pizza and pasta from the same pizzeria, even here in Germany. And we have one where they speak English or speak Italian, so I don't even bother trying with German. And every week I ordered the penne pasta. And whenever I learned that penne with one N has a very different meaning, I started enunciating. I'm like, I know they know what I mean. They're a pasta place. They know what I'm ordering, but I just assume they're laughing at me every time we hang up the phone. So now I make sure.
Yes.
This is very different meaning. And I don't laugh at me.
I think we'd have to wrap this up because we can go on and on and on and on, but we could also dedicate another episode next time. But one last question I would like to ask is, what was your motivation to create Love, Joy, and Languages podcast? Because It's also nice to see that the podcasts like yours and a few actually encourage people to learn the language. But I'm curious to see to know about your motivation on creating it.
So back around lockdown times, when you know everything changed, I was in Italy during lockdown, and so I was the first European place to get locked down, and we kind of set the precedent for everything, and we had no idea what was going on, and it was crazy, and everything changed. I found myself needing a creative outlet to be able to talk about things. So from the beginning, right before lockdown happened, I decided to give up drinking alcohol because this was a big problem in my life, and I needed to make that big change. And I realized that not drinking alcohol anymore was going to be a huge, it was going to change everything, including how I did my language learning, because now I have more time in my day to really focus on the study. And I was able to dig deep into my, you know, my skeletons in my closet that made me want to drink in the first place. Now I've surfaced all those, dealt with them. And a lot of those were the same things that were, I was having problems with in my language learning, specifically perfectionism. I wanting to be perfect and realizing that I can't be, and there's just all this pressure led me to want to drink. Now that I've given that up, I have to deal with the perfectionism. And I realized this was, the perfectionism was showing up in my language learning and wanting to say everything perfectly, learn it fast, not make mistakes, like really beating myself up when I made mistakes or when I didn't understand something. So when I was able to kind of heal in a way that part of me, which is a continual process even now, I'm able to also heal it in the language learning world. So I, even though I'd already been learning Italian for like 2.5 years at that point, I saw it from a completely different and very sober, literally and figuratively, a very sober perspective of this doesn't have to be the way I've always learned it. Now I can practice speaking, and I can make mistakes. I can just go and communicate with people. And I don't know, it opened up kind of a whole new world of thinking of things. It gave me a lot more flexibility in my language learning. It gave me a whole new idea on what's acceptable, and having a streak, studying for hours, like that doesn't have to be the only thing that counts in language learning. I can just write my grocery list, and that's good practice. You know, little things like that, having a lot more flexibility in my languages. So I needed an outlet, and I realized that there are so many other people out there like me, because for years I thought I'm alone. I'm the only US American who's learning their second language at age 33, who lives in the country, who, you know, all of this stuff, but that's just kind of like my intersection of life. And while other people may be non-native speakers, they acquired it faster because their native language was a Romance language, for example, or they didn't have kids when they were learning it. And so there were overlaps in our lives, but they weren't the same. And I realized that I wanted to talk about those things because there's other people out there who are thinking, I want to learn this language, but I'm failing. I'm too old. I don't know how I have the time like to do this. And so in sobriety, I learned that talking about our what we think are our problems that aren't normal, talking about it, we realize that they're totally normal, and we need to talk about it more to have community and progress in a positive way. Same thing with language learning. And so I started a blog and don't really have time to write. I like writing, but it's not my favorite. And the more I talk about things with people on Instagram or something, the more I said, okay, I want to talk about this like in real time. And so, yeah, I decided to try a podcast. I love listening to podcasts. And I want to talk about my own experience. Now, I don't consider myself fluent or advanced in Italian or German, but I've been learning languages for 5 years now from the perspective of a parent, from the perspective of an expat, from the perspective of a perfectionist and someone who, you know, I was going to school full time. I'm getting ready to start a job full time. How do we make all these things work? I just want to talk about my experience. And the feedback I've gotten is so many people being like, that's me. I totally understand when you're talking about when I'm like opening up and being a little bit more vulnerable with the perfectionism or the struggles as a parent. I get so many responses of thank you. I'm the same. And normalizing those things I think is like the number one thing we can do to encourage and strengthen each other all across the board with language learning. So that's the motivation. It was just my own story and feeling alone and not wanting others to feel that way. And the name, my last name is Lovejoy. So I had to use Lovejoy somewhere in there.
That's nice.
But that was very important.
Yeah, it made me think, like, your podcast today while I was meditating this morning made me think of this poem by David White, because I use this waking up app, and there's a section by all these poems by David White, and one is about joy. It's pretty long, but I would like to like close, I think, this podcast interview with one of its phrases, where he says, like, joy may be made by a practiced, hard-won achievement as much as by an unlocked for passing act of grace, arriving out of nowhere. Joy is a measure of our relationship, not only to life, but to death, and our living with death. Joy is the act of giving ourselves away before we need to or are asked to. Joy is practice generosity. And I think you're actually doing that with your podcast.
Oh, thank you. That is beautiful. You have to send me that poem again, who's by, because that is, it's everything. I felt joy because of my accomplishments. And then I've learned to find joy in just being and existing and making the connections that, like, that's how I want to live my life. It's like with these people doing this thing in this language and sharing that with others and helping other people to find their own joy, or at least maybe inspiring someone else to find joy in some small thing in their day. I mean, it doesn't matter. Any small thing can help us survive the day without screaming and stressing and all the other things that we do.
That is true.
That's important. That's beautiful. I love that.
Okay. So I think it was really a pleasure to have this chat with you. And grazie ancora per aver fatto questa chiacchierata con noi, Heidi.
Grazie a voi.
Let's hope to have this chat again. Right,
yeah,
Angie?
Next time. Yeah, definitely.
So thank you everybody for listening, and hope you'll hear from us again very soon. Ciao a tutti.
Ciao a tutti.
Ciao.